Welcome to the program for Wednesday, March 21st, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour is Pentagon Solutions, and today we're looking at the Government Accountability Office, starting today with a look at contracting and competition in contracting at the Department of Defense. Michelle Mackin is Acting Director for Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues at the GAO, my guest to talk about a report on that issue. Michelle, thank you very much for being on the program today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
The report is called Competition for Services and Recent Initiatives to Increase Competitive Procurements. I think it goes without saying among this audience that competition in DoD contracting is important. What specifically were you looking at in this report?
We looked at three things. First of all, just basic trends in competition for products and for services, and then we delved down more into the non-research and development services, and that information was pulled out of the Federal Procurement Data System. We also assessed the reasons for the non-competitive contracts. And then finally, we looked at some of the steps and actions that DoD has in the works to increase competition.
All right, let's look at each of those individually in the context of how you went about examining each of those items. And we'll start with the competition rates and the types of services you looked at.
Well, we pulled Federal Procurement Data System information. We started with fiscal year 2011 obligations. And what we found there for products, which DoD had obligated $177 billion, there was a competition rate of 41%. And by competition rate, I mean the percentage of the obligations in that year that were under competed contracts or
okay.
task orders. For services, DoD had obligated $198 billion, so somewhat more than for products, and they had a 74% competition rate for services in FY11.
Now, how does that number hold up over time? Is that pretty steady historically?
Well, it was interesting. When we looked at trends, and this now is focusing just on services and specifically on non-research and development services, because R&D services are very specific. We wanted to take a broader look at the service acquisitions. Generally, across DoD, it was fairly steady from 07 to 11 at about 78%. The outlier, however, was the Air Force, which dropped from 75% in 2007 to 59% in 2011.
So 75% was about normal. It fit within the standards that you saw at the other branches. Initially, any sense of why it went south the way that it did?
We did not assess the reasons why in this particular report. My understanding is that the Air Force competition advocate is or will be looking into that. I will note that we've been asked by Congress to do another review on DoD competition, and clearly this Air Force trend will be something that we'll explore. I also point out that about half of the obligations in 2011 across DoD were actually for contracts that had been awarded in earlier years. So, one possible reason could be there would just happen to be more obligations in 2011 under earlier sole source contracts. But we'll be looking into that, as I mentioned.
Well, you mentioned also the focus of this was on non-research and development, non-R&D services. Why didn't you look at the weapons systems part of this?
Well, the short answer is that in this particular review, the House and Senate Armed Services Committees asked us to specifically focus in on the service acquisition. So, as I mentioned, for FY11, we did look at the products and services, but then our further analysis was focused on the services. Our next review will be broader and will also be taking into account the products. However, I will note that when DoD purchases a weapon system, there also are often support services included in that contract. So it's not really a fine line between products and services in all cases.
Now, one of the pieces of this report was, you write, based on our analysis in fiscal year 2011, the majority of DoD's non-competitive, non-R&D services contracts and task orders were coded under the only one responsible source category. What does that mean?
Well, as you know, competition is generally required per the Competition and Contracting Act of 1984. However, there are certain exceptions that are allowed, and in those cases, generally a written justification is required to explain why this particular contract couldn't be competed. one of the main reasons, and this is not just DOD but across the government, is that there literally is only one contractor that can provide the service. There's only one responsible source. It could be a unique capability the contractor has. It could be that this contractor owns the technical data, such as the engineering design drawings. That's actually a main barrier for competition at DOD, and mm-hmm. so that's the reason for only one responsible source.
So there is some kind of thing there. And I see here, too, awards under Hub Zone Act, Federal Benefits Act, Small Business Administration's 8A program. Is that the same kind of category, just a different reason?
That's a separate category. It's called authorized by statute.
Uh-huh.
And in the main, the preponderance of those are actually awards made through the Small Business Administration's 8A Business Development Program. And in fact, the one responsible source and the authorized by statute categories of sole source represent about 80% of DOD's sole source, you know, reasons why they couldn't compete those requirements.
Another thing that I noted in this report is it says in July 2010, we identified key factors affecting competition. This is something that you've looked at on a number of occasions, that remark indicates. Other than the trend that you saw that we talked about earlier about the percentage of competition, were there other trends that showed up as you did this research?
Well, one interesting component of this is when a requirement is put out for competition, but only one offer is received. In other words, only one contractor responds. That's technically coded as a competed contract, but clearly if you're only getting one offer, you're not getting the benefits of leveraging the marketplace, thorough market research, you know, multiple prices to compare or what have you. So that's an issue we raised back in July of 2010, and we actually recommended that OMB take a look at perhaps revising the federal acquisition regulation to require agencies to look at why that happened. Was the requirement too narrowly defined so that only one contractor could respond? Was there not enough time for contractors to respond? And this is something that DOD has taken some actions to address.
And you allude to that in another section of this report that's titled Program Offices Can Influence Competition Through Vendor Preference, Poor Acquisition Planning, or Overly Restrictive Requirements. At least you address the requirements piece of it there.
Right.
Talk a little bit about the vendor preference section of that, because that's an issue that vendors talk about informally, off the record. Nobody likes to say it out loud, but you've addressed it out loud here.
Yeah, we did in that report talk to some contractors. You know, when do you not respond to a solicitation? And clearly, they're making an investment in putting a proposal together. And contractors, you know, they have their pulse on what's happening, especially if it's a requirement that they often, you know, they know the other competitors, and they may know that so-and-so's the incumbent. We know they're going to bid again. We're not going to spend our time and money putting in a proposal here.
You address in this report the Better Buying Power initiative that DOD put into place, and I'd like to ask you about that in a moment when we come back from the break, if I can, please.
Okay.
My guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, this part of the program is Michelle Mack, and she's Acting Director for Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office. On In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, we'll continue our conversation in a moment.
IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"When you get down to the benefits of managing data in the cloud, the benefits accrue really to the overall program, not necessarily to the technical group. And by that, I mean, we're talking talking about enablement. So the first benefit, and perhaps the most significant, is that the end user, the employee that is now been or is in the process of being provisioned a tablet device or some smartphone to use in the context of their jobs, but the applications aren't really tuned to work there because the underlying data structures aren't supportive of that and the data is not available in the cloud, at least not in a way that is going to meet the performance requirements of the application.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Want to take your career to the next level? Today, there is an enormous demand for professionals who can contribute to evidence-based policy decisions. The University of Maryland's Master's in Applied Economics will give you the expertise in public policy analysis, quantitative research, and economic modeling. Evening classes will be held in the Ronald Reagan Building at the Federal Triangle Metro Stop. Earn your Master's in Applied Economics from the University of Maryland. Learn more at masters.econ.umd.edu.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Here's Cindy Moran, Senior Director, DISA's Communications Division, on a recent Unified Communications Panel discussion sponsored by General Dynamics IT.
We tend to be a very risk-adverse culture. Even though we engineer and we plan and we design, there's always somebody double-checking the homework to make sure that you've got it right because a commander wants to reach out and touch something. But I think the biggest challenge is cultural assurance. They need to understand culturally that wherever we put those switches, that they're still going
to
be there.
Connecting people to people anywhere, anytime, on any device. Not just an idea, but a demand of today's governments, businesses, and consumers. General Dynamics IT integrates voice, video, and data services to provide increased mission effectiveness. Secure communications is a basic tenet in healthcare, law enforcement, finance, and defense, and will continue to drive the future of our unified communications. Visit GDIT.com for more information. That's GDIT.com.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. Is the national broadband plan a policy failure? The numbers on Americans with broadband have not changed. Technology CEOs blame it on an uncoordinated approach. Plus, it's time for the Cyber Patriot Games. We'll find out why so many smarty pants kids are looking for a federal cybersecurity career. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today on Pentagon Solutions, my guest is Michelle Mack, an acting director for acquisition and sourcing management issues, talking about the GAO report titled Competition for Services and Recent Initiatives to Increase Competitive Procurements in Defense Contracting. You can find a link to that report at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And Michelle, I appreciate your time this afternoon. This report addresses the Better Buying Power Initiative, and I note, given the timeline that you write about here, that Better Buying Power has been in effect for about half of the period of time that you looked at. You looked at fiscal 07 through 11, competition rates for non-R&D services. And the report says 2009, OMB, excuse me, June 2010, DOD announced the Better Buying Power Initiative. So there's been a lot of time relative to the scope of your report for Better Buying Power to be in place. Did you see any difference pre-Better Buying Power and post at the level of competition?
I wouldn't say we saw that clearly reflected in the aggregate data, which is really what we were analyzing. But the Better Buying Power Initiative, of course, covered a lot of different issues. It does have the potential to make a difference going forward. There's quite a bit of emphasis on promoting competition and seeking increased access to contractor technical data rights, which I mentioned is one of the main barriers to competition at DOD. One action that went into effect in November 2010 pertains to the one-offer contracts that I referred to earlier that are competed, but only one offer comes in.
Mm-hmm.
DOD is now requiring if a solicitation only allows for less than 30 days and only one offer comes in, they are now requiring that solicitation to be reissued to allow more time. So that's a promising step, we believe, that could affect that one-offer issue going forward.
You mentioned you refer to competition officials in the various branches of the military at a number of places throughout this report. Overall, the work that you did with them, what were some of the things that they talked about, either anecdotally or data that they provided, that indicated some of the challenges that they were trying to deal with?
Yes, competition advocates are required to be in place at all federal agencies. At DOD, there's a senior competition advocate, and then each military service has a competition advocate, and then even at the command level. So it's kind of a multi-layered approach, and we have interviewed a number of those officials for our July 2010 work, which was fairly recent. Their goal is to promote competition. They do annual reports on competition that identify the barriers and, again, the technical data and the contractor expertise are two of the main ones that they often talk about. We made a recommendation in 2010 directed to the competition advocates that they bring in the program offices a little more. In the past, they had been dealing more with the contracting offices, which, of course, those officials are signing the contracts. But the requirements are generated by the program office. They're funded by the program office. And so we thought putting a little more accountability at the program office side might help inject more competition.
You write in this report, outside of recent efforts to increase competition, OMB and DOD have additional opportunities to address prior GAO recommendations, such as promoting the role of program officials in influencing competition, as you just mentioned, and better understanding the circumstances leading to only one offer on competitive contracts. If I read between the lines, I might take away from that, coupled with the fact that you have no new recommendations here, I might take away a subtext of keep addressing the recommendations we've made already because we still see some possibilities for improvement there. Is that a fair takeaway on my part?
That's exactly right. We did this report, as I mentioned. We've been asked to do another one next year, and since we had just made those recommendations that really touched on what we saw as the key issues, and they are underway. We think DOD, especially at the top level, has paid quite a lot of attention to this issue. Going forward, what needs to happen, of course, is for these policies to be implemented down to the individual program office. So we thought a little more time to let that play out was a good idea.
Beyond the fact that the recommendations issue, any lingering issues, loose ends that you saw as you did this work, especially compared to what you did in 2010?
I think one thing that we explored a little more in this report, and it's not a new issue, is bridge contracts. Another factor that can prohibit competition is, you know, an unexpected event occurs. You're maybe about to award a competitive contract, and then the requirements change, or there's a bid protest, and those can lead to bridge contracts, which are intended to be short-term by their very nature. They are sole-source contracts. In this particular review, we looked at 111 justifications. As I mentioned, they were required justifications if the requirement was not competed. And of those 111, 18 were bridge contracts, and they totaled $9 billion. Five of those 18 were due to bid protests that had been filed. So that was, I think, just another layer of what's going on that may be affecting the possibility of competing some of this work.
$5 billion worth of bridge contracts indicates they might be short-term, but not necessarily small dollar.
Well, of the $9 billion, I will say that $6.6 billion was two TRICARE contracts, which, of course, is DOD's health care program.
Yeah.
Those were one-year bridge contracts, again, due to a bid protest that had been filed. So DOD was in a position of having to go with those for sole source for a year, and it's quite a lot of money there.
And you mentioned protests, and that brings me to my final question this afternoon, Michelle. What impact does the amount of protests or the frequency of protests have on the competition issue as you looked at it?
I don't know that I can answer that in a broad term. As I mentioned, 18 of 111, you know, that's not a small percentage, and five of those 18 were protests, but I don't have the information to assess the overall impact.
This report has a lot of great information in it, Michelle, and I'm grateful for you to be on with me this afternoon to talk about it. Thank you very much for
your
time. Michelle Mackin is Acting Director for Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office. You can read that report at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. And we'll continue our focus on the GAO in just a moment with Bill Woods, Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues, next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
At Kaiser Permanente, we're about keeping you connected. So we made My Health Manager. It connects you to your doctor, your prescriptions, your test results, and your health records right at home. But what if you aren't home? What if you're visiting family, or at the beach, or on a business trip? What if you're on a steep mountain trail, you know, with loose gravel and one way in and one way out? Now, there's the Kaiser Permanente mobile app. It connects you right from your smartphone. You can email your doctor while visiting family, refill your prescription from the beach, take your medical records on a business trip, or schedule, say, a little checkup from that steep trail. No matter where you are, we'll keep you connected without keeping you from any of life's adventures. Get the app by searching Kaiser Permanente in the Android market or bookmark kp.org on your smartphone. Coming soon to the Apple App Store, Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Apple is the registered trademark of Apple Inc. Android is a trademark of Google Inc.
Here's Neil Tipton, Director of Information Sharing and Partner Engagement at DOD, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Information and Intelligence Sharing, sponsored by the AFSEA Homeland Security Conference.
Where we implement in common all those underlying things of the infrastructure and the enterprise that make that work, that has to be where we go because we can't afford to do it any other way. From an information sharing perspective, from a secure the information perspective, and from a fiscal perspective.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Join AFSEA for the first of its TechNet Land Forces conference series. Recently evolved from the annual Land War Net conference, these events will provide a forum for all services to discuss operational issues. The Southwest Conference, being held March 27th through 29th in Tucson, will focus on training tomorrow's cyber warriors, mobile communications on the battlefield, and defending the cyberspace. Register to attend or exhibit at www.technetlandforces.org. That's technetlandforces.org.
Looking to rent or buy in Northern Virginia? Attend the 2012 Northern Virginia Housing Expo, Saturday, March 24th at Arlington's Washington Lee High School. This event is free and open to the public and features 60 exhibitors, including the local housing authorities, property managers, lenders, realtors, mortgage companies, and more. You'll also find workshops on Are You Ready to Rent? And Are You Ready to Buy? Credit scores and home financing. More information available at NovaHousingExpo.org.
Sharp Old Thoughts. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Growing old can slow a person down, but not in everything. A study that looked at thinking ability indicates older people can stay as sharp in some areas as younger ones if they push themselves. Roger Radcliffe of Ohio State had older people and college students do computer-based tests that measured accuracy and reaction time. The college students did better until the researchers asked the older people to speed up their responses.
If we ask them to speed up, they can, and they can get about as fast as young people who have no special instructions.
Radcliffe says older people can have other limitations, though, and so should judge their own strengths and weaknesses. The study in the journal Cognitive Psychology was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for March is the Washington Regional Transplant Community. Organ donation is needed now more than ever before. There are more than 110,000 individuals awaiting a transplant to save their lives, and each one of us has the power to help. Register to become an organ, eye, and tissue donor whenever obtaining or renewing your driver's license, or do it online today at beadonor.org. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com, search charities. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Continuing with our spotlight on the Government Accountability Office today. And the GAO looking at a number of issues regarding an effort to consolidate government-wide acquisition data systems. Bill Woods, Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues at the GAO, here to talk about that issue with me. Bill, it's always good to have you on the program.
Thank you, Francis. Pleasure to be with you.
This report focuses on something called the Integrated Acquisition Environment. Let's start off with an explanation of what that is.
Certainly. That is a mouthful. But basically, it's an effort to consolidate and bring together a variety of data systems that support our acquisition system. And if I might take just a minute to run through the history, it basically started in 2001, an effort led by GSA to, first of all, identify the various systems that support the acquisition system. And by that I mean systems like Federal Business Opportunities, or FedBizOps, the federal procurement data system that many of us rely on for data about the operation of the federal procurement system. Another one is the past performance and information retrieval system that has the funny acronym of PEEPERS. All of those systems are critical to the functioning of the acquisition system, but they developed in a very piecemeal fashion over time. And the Integrated Acquisition Environment, or IAE, was an effort to bring those together. GSA first decided in 2001 to look about the landscape and identify the systems, adopt those that seem to be working well, or in some cases adapt the systems to their purpose, or in some cases to award a contract for the development of a new system. But the end result of that early process was the 9 separate systems. Then in 2008, GSA decided to bring all those under one umbrella, and that one umbrella is called the System for Award Management, which has a much friendlier acronym of SAM or SAM.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the current system that we studied and GSA is trying to implement at this point.
All right. This report says, unlike the existing systems that were each designed, developed, and operated by a single contractor, IAE, the Integrated Acquisition Environment, relies on multiple vendors to perform these same tasks for SAM, the System for Award Management. What's the significance of that?
The most serious consequence is that it's far more complicated. It's important for the 4 contractors that are involved in this process to work together. Each of them has their own unique job that they need to carry out. And it's a much more complicated process. And the possibility for a misstep becomes more likely. And by misstep, let me give you the biggest example of that in the survey that we did. And that is that at one point in time, it was not clear to the parties as to who was responsible for providing hardware and software for operating the system. And that lack of clarity led to some schedule delays, led to cost increases, and was really the underpinning of the problems that we identified in the SAM system.
You also write, SAM will be developed in phases. In each phase, capabilities from selected IA systems will be added to SAM, and those legacy systems will be shut down. How many phases, and what's the timeline that you looked at here?
Well, right now there are four phases, and the first phase, fortunately, is ready to come online in May of 2012. So in just a couple of months, we'll have phase one. But the rest of the phases have been pushed out to the right. The schedule has been moved so that we're going to see those subsequent phases significantly delayed.
You write about the May introduction of phase one and that GSA has established a computing center to host SAM and a help desk to support users. This is the number, though, that jumped out at me. Since 2009, IAE costs have increased by $85 million from about $96 to $181 million. That's almost a 100% increase. Talk about where that cost growth is coming from.
That's a very significant cost increase. And it comes mostly from the hosting services that have proven to be far more expensive than originally anticipated. We estimate that about $65 million of that cost increase is attributable to the increase in hosting costs.
And when you talk about hosting, tell me a little bit more about what that means, because I think most folks think about things like web hosting and that kind of thing, and it's not that at all.
It's not that, but it does have some web components. Hosting basically consists of a secure facility with internet connectivity, the hardware on which the system will be installed, the operating system, and all of the software necessary to operate the code that makes up the system, all of that constitutes hosting.
And did I hear you right? You said that accounts for, you believe, about $65 million of the increase?
That was about $65 million, exactly. And that was the largest component, but not the only component. The other major increase was in the help desk function, a very, very important function for users of the system. That showed a cost increase of about $16 million. And then the third component of the cost increase was the continuing costs for the legacy systems. All of these systems that GSA thought at one point would be integrated into this system for award management now, as I said, are moved out to the right. Those systems need to be maintained. The contracts need to be continued. All of those costs are unanticipated costs and lead or contribute to the cost increase that we just talked about.
Well, let's talk more about that timeline impact when we come back from the break, if we can. I appreciate it, Bill. Bill Woods is the Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office. Continuing our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is In Depth with Francis Rose.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, DC's one and only and best food and wine variety show.
Join us Sunday, March 25th. We're going to get pickled in studio with Gordy's Pickles. They're local pickle makers. They're going to show us all their wares. And if you're into vegetarian food, we've got the chef for you. Chef Adam Barnett is in from Eventide.
I can't believe you made that pickle joke. Anyway, that's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live right here on 1500 AM.
Do you know someone who's done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's third annual COSI Awards. Together we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike COSI and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the COSI Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search COSI Award. Nominations for the third annual COSI Awards are now being accepted. If you're wondering who could be nominated, check out our past winners. 2011, Homeland Security's Maria Rote. Spearheaded front office open houses, chili cook-offs, and Team Spirit Fridays, and fostered the one OCIO approach within headquarters. Nominate someone in your office who you think has made a difference helping people work better together. Don't delay. Nominations for the third annual COSI Awards close Friday, April 6th. Go to federalnewsradio.com, search COSI Award.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Sharp Old Thoughts. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Growing old can slow a person down, but not in everything. A study that looked at thinking ability indicates older people can stay as sharp in some areas as younger ones if they push themselves. Roger Radcliffe of Ohio State had older people and college students do computer-based tests that measured accuracy and reaction time. The college students did better until the researchers asked the older people to speed up their responses.
If we ask them to speed up, they can, and they can get about as fast as young people who have no special instructions.
Radcliffe says older people can have other limitations, though, and so should judge their own strengths and weaknesses. The study in the journal Cognitive Psychology was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Bill Woods. He's Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office. And we're looking at a report titled, Effort to Consolidate Government-Wide Acquisition Data Systems Should Be Reassessed. The subject of this, the integrated acquisition environment, and more specifically, the system to consolidate that called the System for Award Management. Bill, you mentioned in the last segment, you talked about some of the impacts that the sliding of this timeline to the right had. Do we have now a specific timeline of when you mentioned the first phase is coming online in a couple of months. The other three are sliding somewhat. Do we know anything definitive on them yet? Is GSA able to say at this point?
They do have plans for implementing the subsequent phases. But if we're talking about final implementation, we're looking at 2015 before we can see all of the phases fully implemented.
Now, your report mentions limited funding, and the funding is an issue at just about every agency and almost every project, it seems. There are at least concerns about funding. What impact has concerns about funding specifically had? Because that strikes me as something that is really beyond GSA's control. If Congress doesn't appropriate the money, there's not much they can do about it.
Let me give you a little bit of background on the funding,
okay.
because you have raised an issue that's extremely important to this effort. They have basically two sources of funding. One is that they have entered into memorandums of understanding with all of the major agencies that use these various systems to contribute to the development of this system for award management. All of the major agencies make their contributions. For example, the Department of Defense, who's, of course, the largest contracting agency, heaviest user of these systems, contributes up to 65% of the total costs. Other agencies contribute lesser amounts. The other major source of funding is appropriations. And as you point out, it's up to the Congress to decide on how much to appropriate. And GSA has not fared all that well in recent years. For example, a couple of years ago, they requested $15 million in appropriations, received only seven. Last year, they received asked for some $30 million or so in appropriations and received none. For this current year, they're asking for $21 million. So that's has proven not to be a reliable source of funding.
I can envision a hearing where somebody calls them in and says, why have you had problems developing this? And it's going to be easy for them to say, because we asked for this amount and you gave us zero. It's a little hard to execute a program with zero. One of the issues here that you've mentioned is legacy systems. What impact specifically is the maintenance and operation of those legacy systems having on this cost overrun? You touched on it briefly, but explore that a little bit more if you would.
Sure. It's the bottom line is that every dollar that they spend on legacy systems, unplanned funding, is a dollar that they don't have for development and money that they were planning to spend on development. So it just makes the matters worse. Makes the matter worse for them to have to continue with legacy systems. Let me give you one example. They had planned at this point to move the federal procurement data system into this system for award management environment. They have not been able to afford the hardware and software to enable that, and as a result have had to execute new contracts with the incumbent contractor for this federal procurement data system, money that they had not planned to spend in the neighborhood of about $5 million, and they'll continue to have to spend similar amounts for the next few years.
One of the things, the recommendations that you make is assessing the entire business case for this, and I want to talk about that specifically because I want to make sure I'm clear on what it is exactly that you're recommending. We'll do that when we come back. My guest is Bill Woods. He's Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on WFED 1500 AM. This week, my special guest is Rick Leeson, CFA and founder of Frontier Advisors, LLC. The show is sponsored by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. For more information, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
The University of Maryland's Clark School of Engineering, along with the Maryland Cybersecurity Center, offers a new master's degree in cybersecurity engineering specifically designed for the high-tech cyber workforce. Graduates will learn the latest technologies and techniques to be leaders in the defense of our nation's critical infrastructures. As the region's highest-ranked engineering graduate school, the Clark School will put their strengths behind your career. Learn more about the Master's in Cybersecurity Engineering at advancedengineering.umd.edu/cyber.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
The Peruvian government has canceled a port call by a British Navy frigate to show its solidarity with Argentina. This is because of the country's long-running dispute with Britain over the Falkland Islands. The frigate HMS Montrose had been scheduled to visit a naval base in Lima. There have been concerns about whether or not a new military confrontation is brewing over the Falklands between Argentina and Britain because of the discovery of oil recently in the region. I'm J.J. Green.
Airmen, we're on our way.
At EADS North America, we help our country respond to emergencies and natural disasters.
We see you. We're coming in.
From coordinating communications to medevac and emergency response, we provide the mission-critical systems our country demands. Every day, we support homeland security and defense missions here at home and around the globe.
Station secure. ETA 10 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest in this part of the program is Bill Woods, Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office, and we're talking about IAE, the Integrated Acquisition Environment. And you can find that report linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. Bill, your recommendations for the General Services Administration here, this report says that GSA reassess the IAE business case to determine whether the current acquisition strategy is the most cost-effective alternative, and if so, reevaluate the current hosting strategy, which we've talked about, and align contract payments with the program schedule. We've talked about that issue, too. I want to focus on the phrase reassess the IAE business case, because whenever I hear the term reassessing business case, the subtext that I take away from that is you should think about whether you should even do this at all. Is that fair on my part in this case?
I think that's quite fair. We think GSA needs to take a step back and make that fundamental reassessment of the business case. Now, what do we mean by business case? All projects are supported by a business case, which is nothing more than an assessment of what is an agency or private sector entity, for that matter, what are they trying to accomplish, and what are the resources in terms of money and time and people that they're trying to bring to bear on accomplishing that objective. And they need to make sure that there's a match between those expected benefits and the resources. And we think GSA needs to make that fundamental assessment.
Their response was what in this case?
They agreed. They think that that we are right on the mark with our assessment of the current status of the program and on the next steps in terms of making that fundamental reassessment and then moving forward based on that.
We talked in the last segment, Bill, about the concept of congressional appropriations and the monkey wrench that's thrown into GSA's planning here. If I'm sitting in another agency and I'm looking at a pretty long, pretty complex process of trying to consolidate a number of different information sources into one, as this program, the SAM program, was originally intended to do. Based on the fact that I can't count year to year on whether Congress is going to give me the money that it will take to do it, any lessons that I can learn from this about how to kind of keep this on the rails throughout a long process like this?
Well, fortunately for the users of the system, and by that I mean the federal agencies that depend on these systems, including GAO for that matter. We use many of these systems in our work, and also private sector entities that seek to do business with the government. Those users shouldn't see much of an impact. the systems are going to continue to operate. They will be more expensive for GSA, but that's fundamentally an issue that GSA is going to have to deal with.
And the lesson learned then is make sure that if you're going to try something like this, it doesn't take offline whatever system it is that people depend on to actually do whatever the job is.
Absolutely. These are critical systems, and they need to be maintained either in a new environment like the SAM environment or as legacy systems. And keeping the legacy systems operational is one of the options that we laid out in our recommendation. If GSA decides that their current approach is simply not working and cannot work, then keeping the legacy systems operating is one of the options they may wish to consider.
And then I imagine another one would be to can this project and go back to the legacy systems as a whole. Were those the two options, or are there others?
They could refine their current strategy. They could use a different acquisition strategy, such as using a single contractor to develop and operate the system. As we talked about earlier, they currently have four contractors, and that presents some complications in terms of moving forward. But one of the options is to move to a single contractor to provide the capabilities that the SAM system is designed to provide.